My middle grandson, Hudson, he's awesome. He's 7 now. He's clever. He's funny. I got a picture of him. He's kind. He's considerate. He had that speech thing going on when he was little that a lot of kids get, you know, that can't pronounce certain letters. And it was funny at the time, and he was good-natured about it. He's kind of growing out of that. But about 3 years ago, so he'd have been about 4, I'm at their house, and it's close to the 4th of July. And Cooper's my oldest grandson, so he asked me, "Hey, Poppy, what's your favorite movie?" I said, "My favorite movie, dude, is The Patriot with Mel Gibson. Hands down, my favorite movie of all time." And he's like, "What's that movie about?" And I said, "Well, it's where we won our independence." And he's like, "What's independence?" Well, I gave a working definition of independence to my then 7-year-old grandson. I said, "Well, dude, what that means is I'm free, you're free, and Hudson is free." To which Hudson immediately replied, "I'm not free, I'm full." Well, after checking out this random video that I found.
What country famously broke away from England?
Go ahead and start that, boys. That'd be fine. Guys must have a barbecue right after church.
What country famously broke away from England to start their own country in the late 1700s?
I have no idea, man. I don't know.
What are we celebrating on the 4th of July? Exactly?
Our independence.
A little more specific.
It's the day that we overtook the South. And it's the day that... it's our independence. That's why we have the fire.
From the South.
From the South, exactly.
So it was the victor of the Civil War?
Yes.
4th of July?
Yes.
The Declaration of Independence was signed by who?
I don't know.
Just name one person.
Abraham Lincoln? I don't know.
Sorry.
Not.
What year was that Declaration of Independence?
Was it 1964? 84?
1984?
84? I don't know.
No.
1864?
1864.
I don't know.
This country, no wonder this country's in trouble.
No wonder this country's in trouble. It's Independence Day. Here's an interesting thought. When you look at the average governing document of any country, the average length that document lives as the governing document in that country is 17 years. That's in the history of the world, all countries. 17 years with a governing document. Today, if you've done the math, we celebrate 245 years under the same piece of paper. And we've been blessed in ways you don't even recognize. And we're so used to our way of life in this country, I think we believe it's natural, and it's not. What we have is unusual and special for any country in the history of the world, and it's because of the rock-solid foundational truth that our country was built upon. In God we trust. And that phrase is an eternal phrase. And the founding fathers understood that. It wasn't a phrase just meant for them. It wasn't just "in God they trusted" or "in God we trust for now." It was meant to be said by every generation of leaders, and not only said, but seen in policy and in practice. In God we trust. That will govern our decisions. That will govern the way we vote. That will govern our laws. In God we trust is the foundation for which the country is built upon. You lose the foundation, you lose the house. It's a stabilizing phrase. In God we trust. To me, and we talked about it in class this morning, Corey was teaching us about anxiety, and I feel like I'm being honest. I don't get anxious about things. I really never have. I don't worry about things. I hope it's because in God I trust. That no matter who's in the White House, and no matter who controls Congress, and no matter who rules the Senate, and no matter who is on the court, in God I trust. It's like my way of feeling like, okay, going to be okay, because in God I trust. Kind of reminds me of my Uncle Walter. He was a pretty successful guy from Hazard, Kentucky. He was a veterinarian and a taxidermist. pretty successful. And I remember the sign in his window. It said, either way, you get your dog back. Well, this phrase means that no matter what, either way, God is who I trust in. It's amazing, isn't it, that we could be in a place right now where that phrase is openly challenged. Not only is it not practiced, it's openly challenged. Pledge of Allegiance, ongoing effort to have it removed from our nation's history. Well, let's be reminded today. America was founded as a nation under the authority and the blessing of God Almighty. If you've ever walked around Washington, D.C. and noticed all the monuments, you've seen scriptural references time and time again. The Washington Monument was built in honor of our first president, George Washington, carries these inscriptions: holiness to the Lord, search the scriptures. And does anybody know what's written on the cap of the tallest building in Washington, D.C.? The Washington Monument, there is a phrase on the cap. Anyone? You don't have to tell me the Latin, just tell me what it means. Laus Deo, which means praise be to God. Now, I want you to check out this video before we really start into the passage today. And this one's a whole lot better than the first one that I showed you. So let's check this out.
4th of July, 1776, the day we celebrated our independence from Great Britain. However, not only was it our independence that we celebrated, but the birth of our great nation. A nation that was forged on the sacrifice of pilgrims, pioneers, and patriots. One of men and women who believed in and trusted in God. People who knew his creation and all it had to offer. Selfless men who believed in something much bigger than themselves.
I have a dream today.
Our founding fathers, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, they were simple men, but yet men of principle. These men knew that America had a great purpose. Such men stood to tyranny and declared that a nation should only belong to one creator, a creator who gave us a land where the mountains soar high, where the rivers run deep, and where our children can be free. Our American Revolution took heart and prayer. It took determination and courage. There have been and continue to be countless brave men and women devoted to our country, who left the comfort of their homes and loved ones to sacrifice their lives in order to secure our rights and our freedom. We live in a nation that has emerged and grown strong, substantially through the vision and efforts of inventors, idealists, and innovators. The inventive potential and power America has gained and displayed has made us who we are known to be today, the land of opportunity. A people that pursues happiness, a better life, freedom, and a brighter future. We took our dreams and made them a reality. We turned what was thought to be impossible and made it possible. And what was one small step for man, it was a great step for mankind. Today, as we celebrate our nation's independence, the sacrifice of our forefathers, a nation that was created for a purpose, as we proudly wave our red, white, and blue and celebrate our freedom, a freedom born of sacrifice, blood, and sweat, as we rejoice to be a part of a nation of mountains and valleys, as we come together in our America, we salute those who gave their lives. We salute those who believe in freedom, and we remember that we are one nation under God with liberty and justice for all.
With liberty and justice for all. I remember Jayla when she was little. She had to say the Pledge of Allegiance in front of her class. They have a different student do it every day. And I had taken her to see Toy Story. And after seeing Toy Story, she wanted to watch it then 99 more times quickly. And so she's reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. She didn't struggle with big words like allegiance or republic or indivisible. But she got to the end, and her favorite character was Buzz Lightyear. So she would conclude her part of the pledge with, instead of liberty and justice for all, she would say, with liberty and beyond. Well, I think she's not the only one to forget the ending. The phrase was meant to be the glue that binds our country together. The Constitution spells out that the same rights and privileges are accessible to everyone under law, age, race, gender, economic status. And in this encounter that I want to look at with Jesus today, we're going to check out a discussion between the Lord and some of his enemies. And it's an interesting conversation, because what is it they say are the two things you should not talk about at your dinner table? Religion and politics. Check out Matthew 22, beginning with verse 15. Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him in his words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians. Teacher, they said, now listen to all this flowery stuff that they don't mean. Teacher, they said, we know that you are a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. What a crock. They don't believe a word of that. You ever have anybody butter your bread that way and then they're just about to lower the boom? You aren't swayed by others, they said, because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not? But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, you hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Show me the coin used for paying the tax. They brought him a denarius, and he asked them, whose image is this? Whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Then he said to them, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, to God what is God's. When they heard this, they were amazed, so they left him and went away. Nice try, boys. Didn't work with Jesus. These groups that come together, the Pharisees and the Herodians, that's an interesting group. The Herodians were a political party who wanted to restore a Herod to the throne in Judea, but the Pharisees wanted to restore a descendant of David to the throne, and they hated each other. So these two groups that hate each other are coming together to try and trap Jesus. I mean, you can't understand the animosity here. This is Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi working together. This is Hatfields and McCoys. This is Archie Bunker and George Jefferson. This is Bobby Knight and Gene Cady working together because they can't stand each other, but more than they can't stand each other, they can't stand Jesus. What's that old phrase? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. So here they are confronting Jesus with a question. And man, I love all this buildup. Teacher, we know you're a man of integrity and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men. You pay no attention to who they are. Put your boots on for that. These dudes are pouring it on with their fingers crossed behind their back. Didn't mean one word of it. And Jesus saw right through it. Look at his response, Matthew 22:18. But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, you hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Now, yes and no questions, they're not always revealing of the truth, are they? Let me ask somebody a yes or no question. Let me pick on somebody. Mike, yes or no? Is it true that you've stopped cheating on your taxes? Good answer. He pleads the fifth because had he said yes, that means he stopped cheating. Had he said no, that means he continues cheating. It's not always revealing, and Jesus knew that, and so he didn't give him a yes or a no. He starts calling them names. And since Jesus never did anything wrong, occasionally it's okay to call somebody a name. You hypocrites. And you say, well, what verse? I say, take your pick. In Matthew 5, verse 13, you hypocrites. Verse 15, you hypocrites. Verse 25, you hypocrites. Verse 27, you hypocrites. And then he concludes verse 33, you hypocrites. And then because he's tired of calling them hypocrites, he wants to call them something else. He concludes at the end of verse 33, you snakes, you brood of vipers. I love that Jesus didn't just preach to the people in the back, but the big sinners in the front row, like Charlie down here. You just happen to be in the right place, Charlie. Thank you for that. Now look at the question they try to trap him with. Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Well, here's what they're thinking. Heads we win, tails we win. Because if he says no, they will accuse him of rebellion against Rome. Not a good thing for Jesus. If he says yes, the common people who hate Rome will turn on him. Heads we win, tails we win. So Jesus asks for a coin, and they give him one, and he holds it up, and he says, whose picture is on this coin? And they say, Caesar. And then he gives what is probably one of the most quoted comments in all of Scripture, along with, do not judge or you'll be judged. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. The original language is more specific, give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, give back to God what is God's. So that got my mind, the wheels in my head turning. What actually belongs to Caesar? And what actually belongs to God? I mean, if I'm supposed to give to Caesar, and Jesus tells me to, what is Caesar's? I need to know what that is, because I don't want to give him what's not his. And if I'm supposed to give to God what's God's, I need to know what that is. So let's mention a couple of things. What's Caesar's? Respect for authority, but not our worship. You probably wish this verse wasn't in the Bible, Romans 13, 1. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except which God has established. So according to the great apostle, submitting to governing authorities means we submit to God. It's an absolute truth, but it's not absolute on its own. If that submission to that authority forces you to dishonor God or not be able to serve God, decisions have to be made. And I would hope every single believer in this church and this country, if put in the position that obeying the government meant directly disobeying the Lord, that we would always choose God. Now, this is one of those places where I will be misquoted, because one of you well-meaning people who I love dearly will go out and say, well, Mark said this, and it's not exactly what I said. So let me be specific. I am saying we obey the government unless the government makes us disobey God. I am saying that. I am not saying we obey the government unless the government disobeys God. I'm not saying that, because even Jesus didn't say that. So let's be more specific. How about some Bible examples where the government put individuals in direct opposition of God's will and way for their life? Daniel, the authority passed a law that people must bow down and pray to the king. Daniel didn't obey that law. Peter and John, the authority directed them to stop preaching on the streets. Peter and John didn't obey that law. Matter of fact, Peter's response to that was, we must obey God rather than men. And when you look at the three institutions that God has established for us, God has given us the home, God has given us the church, and God has given us the government. What have we done with those three institutions? How about the home? The divorce rate is at an all-time high. 53% of all first marriages end in divorce. If I marry 20 couples this year, 12 of them won't make it. 80% of second marriages, where someone went through a divorce and got married again, end in divorce. What was meant to be the primary socializing agent of our young people has failed them time and time again. And the average home in America today resembles that of a war zone. That's what we've done with the home. God gave us the home. God gave us the church. What have we done with that? Splits and division over the most ridiculous of issues. I went to a website on church splits, and it revealed what I thought. The really important things that have literally split churches. See if you notice a theme here. The appropriate length of the worship minister's hair. Church split over that. Whether or not to install restroom stall dividers in the women's restroom. Which picture of Jesus to hang in the foyer. Who knows what he looked like anyway? One church had a picture of Jesus in the foyer. I thought it was Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees. The church split over that. Whether or not to sing happy birthday every Sunday. And should the clock in the worship center be removed? A church split over that. I read and reread the entire list, and not one thing on the list was an issue of doctrine or a matter of faith or a convicting truth from the Bible. So can I speak plainly? How childish can we be? I read about one church where the preacher and the worship leader weren't getting along. That won't happen here. I generally get along with myself. Well, not always, I guess. But anyway, it started to bleed over into the service. And, man, you don't want that. You don't want the staff going at it, especially kind of subtly to try and fool the congregation. But that's what happened here, because the preacher, whatever he would preach on, the worship leader then would get up and lead a song that was the exact opposite of what he just said. For instance, he preached on commitment and how we need to dedicate ourselves, and immediately the worship leader changed the song to I Shall Not Be Moved. See how that works? Next week, he preached on giving and how we should gladly give, and the worship leader then led the song, Jesus Paid It All. Next week, the preacher preached about gossiping and rumors and controlling your tongue. And the worship leader led, "I love to tell the story." Well, the preacher became so upset with the worship leader that the next Sunday, he told the congregation he was resigning. The worship leader got up and led, "Why do you wait, dear brother?" The next week, the preacher did resign and told the church it was Jesus that had called him there, and it was Jesus who was calling him somewhere else. And the worship leader led the song, "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." It's amazing what we've done with this institution called the church. You ever read a description of the first church? Acts 2:42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together, everything in common, sold property, possessions, gave to anyone who had need. No mention of church staff issues or leadership fights or squabbles over how long the worship minister's hair is. What have we done with this incredible institution that God has given us in his wisdom? The home, we have destroyed the home. The church, we have divided the church. Do I even need to start on the government? According to the Romans passage, the government was established for our good, and if we're going to give Caesar what's Caesar's, even if we don't like the party in power, and I don't, even if we don't, even if we don't like the makeup of the Congress or the laws upheld by the court, the counsel from Scripture is we give our respect for authority, even if the sole reason is because God established that authority. Respect for authority, but not our worship. I thought of one more thing we give to Caesar, and you probably wish I'd have quit before this. How about our taxes, but not our tithes? Now, not to say there couldn't be some unjust taxes. Your preacher has some opinions on an unjust tax code. We won't go into all of that. It took me a few years, but I finally learned the difference between the long and the short income tax forms. Do you know the difference? If you use the short form, the government gets your money. If you use the long form, your accountant gets your money. Maybe you feel like Tim Hankins. This dude from Oklahoma found out that he owed the IRS $3,400 in 1997. I like this guy, and I've never met him. He packaged up his payment and sent this letter that included an article from USA Today. "Enclosed is my 1997 tax return and payment. In the USA article, you will see the Pentagon is paying $171.50 for hammers, and NASA's paying $600 for toilet seats. Please find enclosed 4 toilet seats, $2,400, and 6 hammers, $1,029. Please note the overpayment of $22 and apply it to the presidential election fund. Might I suggest you send them a 1.5-inch Phillips head screw? It's been a pleasure paying my tax bill this year, and I'm looking forward to paying it next year." That's the attitude. Did you know the IRS has a conscience fund for people who have cheated on their taxes and feel guilty later? Check out this letter. "Dear IRS, I've been unable to sleep knowing that I cheated on my income tax. I've sent a check for $150. If I still can't sleep, I'll send the rest later." Nobody enjoys paying taxes. I mean, I don't enjoy it, but I know some benefits as a citizen of this country and a resident of this county. And in context, they had it way worse than we. It wasn't just about paying tax for them. Remember when Jesus took the coin and he said, "Whose inscription is this?" Well, it was Caesar. They've been taught all their lives to not bow down or give in or worship graven images. In their minds, not only was paying the tax unjust because of the tax itself, but because they were somehow worshiping a graven image. There were several different kinds of taxes they had to pay when Jesus said that. A ground tax on land consisting of a tenth of all grain, a fifth of wine and fruit. An income tax that was 1% of a man's earnings, a toll poll tax on all men between the ages of 14 and 65, and on all women from 12 to 65, and this tax was 1 denarius, the daily wage of a working man. But their real problem was the coin. You can find this denarius or one like it on display in the British Museum. Here's a picture of both sides of that coin that Jesus held up. So on our left, that's Tiberius Caesar. He was the Caesar in charge when Jesus was crucified. the back of the coin, there's debate about who this lady is. I don't really have any thoughts in regards to the debate, but I'll tell you who the three are that they debate. Livia, who's the mother of Tiberius, Justitia, the goddess of justice, and Pax, the goddess of peace. But Jesus focused on the front of the coin. And no matter where you are on the concept of taxes, there's no denying that paying taxes was one of the things Jesus was referring to when he said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. So what is Caesar's? Respect for authority, but not our worship. Taxes, but not our tithe. Now, this should be a short point coming up. What is God's? Anyone, what's God's? Everything, us. Everything, including the government, is God's. You've heard me preach enough to know I lean on Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The world and all who live in it. This is an important point to make because this is the foundational thought that our forefathers leaned on and a thought current political systems have abandoned. We've been told most of our lives, again, we should not discuss religion and politics at the table. We're also told that the two should not mix. The separation of church and state, while that phrase is thrown around quite a bit, the context of that, I don't think we ever understand. The text of the 1786 Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom gave insight into the nation's First Amendment right. Check this out. No man shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship, place, or ministry in his body or goods, nor shall otherwise suffer on account of his religious opinions or belief, but that all men shall be free to profess and by argument to maintain their opinion in matter of religion, and that the same shall in no wise diminish, enlarge, or affect their civil capacities. Interpretation? The separation of church and state was only meant to keep the state out of the church. It was never meant to keep the church out of the state. Now listen to me. It was meant to keep the state out of the church. It was not meant to keep the church out of the state, because our founding fathers, every decision they made was based on the fact that they had faith in God and they trusted in God and that they believed in God, and all of these decisions would only work if they were blessed by God. The founders of our country never envisioned a society that they believed could function and thrive apart from faith in God. They were right. It can't. We use our rights and our privileges as citizens here, but I want to tell you before I close, we're citizens of another place too, aren't we? I have dual citizenship. I'm a citizen here, and I'm a citizen, according to the Bible, there. And I want to say this to you as respectfully as I can. One of the painful signs of years of dumbed-down education is how many people are unable to make a coherent argument in regards to religion or politics. Respectfully, some can vent their emotions. They can question other people's motives. They can make bold assertions. They can repeat slogans. If you are a citizen of the United States of America and you haven't read the Constitution, and you haven't read the Bill of Rights, and you don't understand what a democracy is or a republic is, if you don't realize we're not a pure democracy, we are a representative democracy, a republic, if you don't understand the three branches of government and how they work, if you can't pass a simple citizenship test like the ones you find online, then perhaps you should be careful before you speak. You are a citizen. You should know what that means. Equally, if you don't know what the kingdom of God is, and you haven't read the documents of the kingdom, and you don't know anything about righteousness or the origin of evil or justification or grace, maybe you should be careful before you speak. You are a citizen of heaven. You should know what it means to be a citizen. Give to Caesar what's Caesar's. Give to God what's God's. Here's what happens when you get those confused. Two verses from John, 19:12 and 19:15. Honor all people. That's not the one I need, Terry. There you go. From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free, but the Jewish leaders kept shouting, if you let this man go, you're no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar. That's the people of God speaking right there. John 19:15. But they shouted, "Take him away, take him away, crucify him. Shall I crucify your king?" Pilate asked. "We have no king," they said, "but Caesar." The chief priest answered. Listen, no matter what administration is in power, Biden Harris, Trump Pence, Carter Mondale, Reagan Bush, or the future candidates for 2024, do we have your votes? We can't do any worse. That's our slogan. We can't do any worse. Scott Fugate, we can't do any worse. By the way, Charlie, if that happens, that will be a clear sign that Jesus is coming soon. Listen, it's Independence Day. No matter who's in the chair in the Oval Office, Jesus is always on the throne. He picked up the coin that day and he said, "Whose image is this?" And they said, "It's Caesar." He said, "Then give to Caesar what's Caesar's." Well, whose image are we made in? Crystal, whose image are you made in? God's. Aaron? God, we are made in God's image. So give to Caesar what is Caesar's. Give to God what is God's. Amen.